supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Family is made possible in part by the generous support of Devereaux, the nation's largest nonprofit provider of behavioral health care for children, adolescents, and adults with developmental and intellectual disabilities, behavioral disorders, and mental illness. Devereaux operates at 15 centers in 11 states throughout the country.
I'm sorry, so sorry, that I was such a fool.
Gotta love that song. The today's show's about apologies, about what it means, what it effects it has, and why we need to say them. Over the years, we've heard countless apologies from leaders, celebrities, business leaders, and others in the spotlight. Just over the weekend, we heard from the CEO of Toyota, who apologized for the company's largest recall ever. And the other week, of course, we heard an apology from the 2008 Democratic presidential candidate, John Edwards. He apologized for denying that he was the father of a child born to his mistress. In the public statement, he said, quote, "To all those I have disappointed and hurt, these words will never be enough, but I am truly sorry," unquote. Sounds like a heartfelt apology, but do we buy it? As many of us know, apologizing can sometimes be a very difficult thing to do. But what makes us apologize? What are the motives? Is it guilt? Shame? Is it wanting forgiveness? And what makes an apology effective? Well, to answer all of these questions and more, I've got two guests. Joining me here in the studio is Maurice Schweitzer. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School, where he researches apology-related topics, specifically around deception and how we rebuild trust. Maurice, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
On the phone, we're joined by Fred Luskin. He's a leading expert on forgiveness. He's director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects. Fred, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
And if you want to give us a call, talk about apologies you have said, apologies you would like or need to hear, give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Fred, people apologize for lots of different reasons. Some are to save face or, to avoid an argument or to assuage guilt. So why do people apologize? Or is it something we are hardwired to do?
I mean, that would certainly be my belief. But if you ask, like, why would somebody apologize, and there's a variety of reasons, some benign and some selfish. So it appears that people are hardwired to have social concerns and to have compassion and to feel remorse. And it also appears that people are hardwired to have incredible selfishness and a desire for personal gain. And apology is one piece of those larger trends.
Maurice, certainly some apologies, like Fred said, are self-serving. Somehow, when Michael Vick apologized for dogfighting, I felt we didn't get a sense that he really understood what he did. But even when someone apologizes because they truly feel guilty, that can also be seen as self-serving.
I think that's exactly right. I think apologies need to be perceived to be sincere to be effective. And if people perceive an apology to be a self-serving statement that doesn't express remorse, then you find that people really don't buy it, and they actually dislike that person and don't trust them.
So you're the researcher here. You use the word perceive. So is that in the eyes of the perceiver, or is there something about an apology that makes it seem more honest and heartfelt?
Well, I think the key issue is for the person receiving the apology, the person who suffered some harm, to believe that the apology is sincere. And it's hard to know, for example, if Edwards, in your example, was really sincere or not. If we don't believe that he's sincere, if you don't believe that Michael Vick is sincere in his apology, then there's no way for us to get past that, and we don't restore that relationship.
So what are the elements that make an apology effective?
It's interesting. There's a substantial amount of research, some of which I've done, looking at the different components of an apology. There's statements, of course. There's the apology statement itself, but there are also a number of pieces of an apology that you can think about. There's the statement that, you know, I'm sorry. There's an expression of remorse, like I feel awful. You can think about an offer to help, like I'll do whatever possible to rectify the situation. Fourth, there's a self-castigation, like, you know, I can't believe I did this. I can't believe these words came out of my mouth. There's a direct request for forgiveness, you know, please forgive me. And what I've found particularly important is this sixth piece, a promise to change. So some promise about the future behavior. So in the future, I promise to do something different. And
that's a bit challenging, that last one, the promise to change. Again, that's words. It's dangerous to promise the future, isn't it?
Well, if it's incredibly dangerous to promise things you can't deliver upon. In fact, right before I came over here, I actually printed out Michael Phelps's apology from February 2009, when that photo emerged of him.
The Olympic gold medalist.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. So, Michael Phelps, who won all those gold medals in the pool, was, you know, it sort of emerged that he had been apparently smoking marijuana. And he made a very public apology. And interestingly, the last sentence of his apology was exactly this: I promise my fans and the public it will not happen again. That's a specific promise to change, and that promise to change, what I found from my own research, is incredibly powerful in shifting perceptions and changing beliefs, in restoring relationships.
We're back to the perception thing, because if I do something to you and I say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that again, that's different from me saying to you, I'm sorry, I will make a heartfelt effort to not hurt you in that way again.
Well, in that latter apology, what you're saying is you're saying that it's heartfelt, that it's somehow a deeper apology. What you're trying to do is get me, and this is why I'm focused on the perception, you're trying to get me to perceive that you're really sincerely apologetic and that you want to change.
As opposed to, I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Yeah, or I'm obviously trying to pull one over on you. I'm trying to get you to cooperate with me, even though I might be likely to dupe you again later.
Fred, I want to bring you into one aspect of something Maurice said, and he said a component of apology is asking for forgiveness, but asking for forgiveness can also be self-serving. There's a family therapist named Chloe Medeiros who works with or did work with perpetrators of sexual abuse in the family, and she said that a perpetrator has no right to ask for forgiveness. They have no right to ask for anything because they've already taken something away in the fact of their betrayal. What are your thoughts about that?
I think that's ridiculous.
Huh.
And I think it's dangerous. I don't know, even like narcissistically based expression that, what did Desmond Tutu say? Without forgiveness, we have no future. And If you limit somebody to the worst of their acts, and if we did that to each other, and then we did that communally, the world would cease. And so the possibility of forgiveness is essential, as is the possibility of a heartfelt apology. Now, one thing that I want to add to the conversation is this question of perception. And one of the reasons why forgiveness is so important is that our perception changes based upon our degree of rage, based on our degree of obsession with what happened, based on our personality development. I mean, perception is not just an unbiased quality, and though there are people for whom they can exercise some control over their perceptions to be more or less in accordance with the sincerity of the offender, and other people, they're so upset and their ability to process information even neurologically is so damaged that they can't perceive accurately. And so what makes this so dynamic is the interplay between the person, say, offering an apology and all the, say, the dynamic information in their head, and then the dynamic information in the person who's receiving it, and then the relationship.
Well, let me follow up on that with a personal story, because I had a pretty powerful experience just yesterday. You don't know this, Fred, but I'm in a wheelchair. I had an accident 30 years ago. So at the time, I had a very best friend. I mean, a good buddy, you know, go to the gym twice a week, best friends. And after my accident, he came to visit me in the hospital every day for about 2 months, and then I never saw him again. Disappeared from my life. And I felt all the emotions you can imagine I would have, you know, the hurt, the rage, righteous indignation. Didn't hear from him for 30 years. He'd send me an email once every 5 years, and I'd follow up. He obviously followed my career. But he recently wrote me and said he wanted to come down. I'm in South Jersey. He's in New York. And see me. He realized I was getting older. He was getting older. Now, I should say that over the years, my rage dissipated and kind of went away, and it became a non-event for me. And then years later, I felt compassion for this guy. I mean, I'm thinking this guy carries all this guilt and shame and remorse all these years, and I felt compassion. When I saw him yesterday, when I opened the door, we hugged. And you know, at the end of the day, I mean, it felt like I was contacting an old friend. At the end of the day, I don't think he apologized. I mean, he explained what he did. The explanation was a little confusing. He didn't apologize, but I didn't need one. You know, I was fine with the non-apology. So here's a case where two different people are on two completely different wavelengths.
That's more common than that people are on the same wavelength, that we're each so boundaried by the incessant, repetitive nature of our own thinking that it's very hard to slow that down or get some distance from it to consider like exactly where another person may or may not be.
Hmm. If we're talking about apologies, so if you have apologized, need to apologize, and are having difficulty doing it, or need to hear an apology, give us a call. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Maurice, you had a...
Well, yeah. I wanted to follow up two points related to what you were talking about. One is there are barriers to apology and how difficult it is for us to apologize. In many cases, it's there's a sign of weakness that we're concerned about projecting. There's an admission of guilt that we're afraid of projecting. In some communities, like the medical community, there's sometimes a fear of lawsuits by admitting fault. So there are often barriers. But one thing that your friend did is take a large action, and actions emerge as something incredibly important in cementing beliefs about the effectiveness of an apology. That is, we we're much more likely to give this apology credence when there are actions that follow it. So, for example, Kobe Bryant, who admitted to having an affair back in July 2003, what we remember is in part his apology, and his apology was very extensive, but it was followed by a $4 million 8-carat purple diamond that he ended up giving his wife. So there was a cost to that. When we think about Martha Stewart, who was accused of insider trading, and then she suffered by going to prison. I think, and people followed that quite intensely. Tiger Woods has, I think, struggled with the broader community. His apology was vague that he initially issued, and then the time that he spent away has been on his yacht, and there was a lot of media attention on his yacht. It doesn't look like he's suffering.
And yet I have a gut feeling we're going to forgive him.
We will. Here's why. What his transgression was about was not core to why we watch Tiger Woods. Same thing for Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart's career has rebounded. She's selling books. People are watching her. She gives us fashion advice. She doesn't give us investment advice. Arthur Andersen, which was accused of shredding Enron documents and approving, auditing books that shouldn't have been approved, that was a core failure, and we can't forgive that.
Why did we forgive Clinton? I think we did, and I have a feeling we will not forgive John Edwards.
You know, one thing that I would say that I having traveled the country, I don't know if we forgave Bill Clinton or the people who called themselves Democrats were, like, in opposition to the people who were pursuing Bill Clinton. And I'm not sure they forgave him or they simply aligned with him, and it became part of our, like, deepening political kind of extremism. You know, like the people who you're either for me or against me. Because one of the things that has to happen for true forgiveness to occur is people experiencing the pain and the outrage and the suffering, that real forgiveness occurs after grieving, that you don't get forgiveness for free if it's real. What you get is, I've suffered, I hurt, I've been angry at you, you disappointed the heck out of me, I've touched that place, and now I'm releasing it. It's not that
Now you're opening up a bigger issue. We're going to have to take a break, but I do want to come back to that issue, and that's the issue of healing. When we are betrayed, we are wounded, and forgiveness is a word unless there's real healing that takes place. So when we come back, I want to talk about forgiveness contributing to healing or healing contributing to the efficacy of forgiveness. We'll talk about those and so many more things. Our number here, if you want to call in about forgiveness, tell us your story, is 888-477-9499. But I want to give you another number right now to call, and I want you to call this number if you're a listener, if you're a loyal listener, if you like Voices in the Family, or if you like WHYY, and that number is 888-345-9499. That's our number at Pledge Central. We're in the middle of our pledge break, and we would just love to hear from you. Show your support for this station, for this kind of programming. You know by now, you're not going to get it anywhere else but on public radio. I think on the other side, we have Mike and Scott, my friend, our executive producer, Kira McGrath. Are over there, Mike and Kira?
Yes, thank you so much, Dan. Kira McGrath, of course, is our COO, Chief Operating Officer here at WHYY. And we're hoping that you'll take this opportunity to show your support for Voices in the Family by calling 1-888-345-9499. A fascinating discussion, Kira, about the topic of forgiveness. So many times we see public figures or people in our lives apologize, and we take that maybe at face value. We don't really think about, why was I fine forgiving this person, but I'm still harboring a grudge toward that person? And that's what Voices in the Family, I think, does best. It looks at the deeper issues beyond what we see at first glance.
You know, Micah, it's so good to listen to Dr. Dan. I feel like I'm sort of on vacation right now. You know, all morning, you know, Micah and I work here at WHYY, and I spent the morning, you know, at my desk doing email, you know, reviewing things on the phone, all that. I came down here, and it is such a pleasure to sit back, you know, take this time away from all of that and think about sort of larger issues in life. Apologies. How many times do we do it? How sincere is it? And it's so fascinating listening to this discussion because we all do it. It's something you think about. And there are all of these examples, especially it seems in the past couple of months, and the out there about people asking forgiveness, what they're doing, are we forgiving them? But it's just kind of takes your mind away to another place, listening to this program, and that's the kind of programming we try to do at HYY, to make you think, to give you context, to add richness to your life.
And if you want to support that, take that moment to call 1-888-345-9499. We have a wonderful group of individuals taking your calls. You can always pledge online at whyy.org. We had lunch brought to us today from Pizza Rustica, and we want to thank them for that delicious pie, as always. Thank you to all of our supporters in the community. And right now, we're asking you to partner up with us by making that pledge of support. 1-888-345-9499. Is that number. A lot more to come on the topic of apologies. And, you know, if you just think about what a wonderful treasure Dan Gottlieb is, he is really known around the world at this point as an expert in the field of mental health, as somebody who has an incredible life story and a wealth of information. And we can be so proud here at WHYY that he is one of our own, that we have a program with him, and for over 20 years he's been part of the fabric of WHYY. You support it by calling 1-888-345-9499.
Yeah, Megan, and as we said, this is our winter pledge drive. We come to you. We're listener-supported public media, and without you, we wouldn't be here. It's really important. It's over half of our operating budget, and that's why we come to you for these pledge drives, and we hope you'll give us a call at 1-888-345-9499. Thank you very much.
Sorry.
How many songs could we hear that have the word sorry in them? We'd probably be here. We'd probably be here for the rest of the week. We're talking about apologies, and we're talking about forgiveness, and how those two things link up. We are joined by Fred Luskin. He's a leading expert on forgiveness. He's director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project. He's on the phone with us, and here in the studio is Maurice Schweitzer. He's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business, and he researches apology-related topics such as deception and how we rebuild trust. Let's go right to the phones here. We've got Hope on the line. Hope, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dan.
Hi.
I'd like to ask your guests where forgiveness figures in, if at all, in the country's healing from 9/11. Do we forgive the hijackers? Do we need to forgive the hijackers?
Well, that's an interesting question. I'm glad you called in with it, and I am thrilled that we have two experts here that so that I don't have to answer that question myself. So I'm going to ask you to take the call off the air, Hope, and let me see who I can turf that off to. Fred?
Well, you know, the
It's a tough question, and I've done a little bit of work with some family members from 9/11 because the attack was so brutal and premeditated. And yet, in the work that we've done, we've seen the harm done from unforgiveness, because it causes us both to physically constrict, which has health consequences. It causes us to neurologically constrict, which has thinking consequences. And it limits us to a moment in time which has passed. And each of those is limiting to, like, our full, like, thinking about how to best live life today. So the bottom line is, you know, the simplest is that forgiveness does not mean you forget. So you never forget that you've been harmed. You never, you know, cease trying to make the best life you can, and you never cease trying to find justice if that's possible. That said, holding bitterness towards something in the past, in particular to people who are dead, is not always the best strategy.
And seeking justice is not necessarily about revenge.
In its truest form, it's only rarely about revenge.
Yeah.
I mean, every now and then there are moments, like, human beings are hardwired, we're neurologically programmed to both think of revenge and to get pleasure from experiencing, thinking about revenge, that there are situations where you have to catalyze all of your forces to harm somebody back who harmed you. And that is biologically part of us. That said, as time passes and as other experiences occur, that part of us becomes less and less useful. And again, that Desmond Tutu quote, like, if that becomes, that revenge quote, becomes part of a culture's way of being, then it helps, it causes parts of that culture to atrophy.
Maurice?
Yeah, I mean, I would add to Fred's comments. I mean, we'll, as a nation, as a community, we'll absolutely be better off when we forgive, and we'll feel and be better. It's difficult because the intentionality that was that underlied those attacks seems to still be there. If you think about horrendous violence that we've witnessed historically, you can think about the ability of societies to really move beyond that. So you think about, say, U.S. relations with Germany or U.S. relations with Japan, we've had incredible violence. Or if you think about relations between Germany and Israel, where you can think about past experiences that were horrendous, where the intentionality was to commit a very violent set of acts. And when we forgive, all of these relationships, so U.S. with Germany, U.S. with Japan, Germany and Israel, they had both this verbal apology as well as very concrete actions.
We should put in here that forgiveness is not about condoning the behavior, as Fred implied about not forgetting. It's not about condoning the behavior. I mean, one of Webster's definition is forgiveness is about letting go of resentment.
One of the reasons that an apology from the personal work that I've done in so many ways can be so helpful is that key part of an apology where somebody says, I understand your pain and I see how it is that I contributed to it and I'm sorry for that. That in the therapeutic kind of psychological emotional aspect, that's what I find to be the key. That, and I will do my best to not cause you that pain again because I understand it and I see it, and that is an act of humility where one is caring almost as much about the other as they are about themselves, and that is an incredibly powerful thing. And certainly, I'm just piggybacking, whatever group was responsible for attacking us at 9/11 certainly hasn't apologized and certainly has no concern at that level for the suffering we've had. And that makes forgiveness or any kind of reconciliation much more difficult.
What happens if one apologizes in the way both of you gentlemen have laid out and forgiveness is not granted? What happens? Maurice?
Well, I think what Fred was talking about is this idea of an effective apology that changes beliefs about what's going to change. When you receive an apology and it's not accepted, in large measure that reflects a belief, perhaps, you know, we talked about perceptions at the beginning. I think people might have perceptions that they really haven't changed or that the apology wasn't deep enough to compensate for the harm that was caused.
Or the person who's receiving the apology just can't let go of that resentment for fear of reabuse because of they don't want to expose their own vulnerability. This gets back to the question I talked about before the break about healing. Some healing has to take place.
I think that's possible, but the human condition is remarkable. The cases of the church sex abuse scandals, there's a where people were willing to forgive. In some cases, all they wanted was an apology. There's a case from the summer of 2009. This girl, Kayleen Sosa, bumped her head. Her parents took her to Baptist Children's Hospital in Miami. Kayleen was under sedation in an MRI, and the breathing tube got dislodged. So she lost oxygen, and it caused brain injury. What's amazing about this case is that, you know, here's a girl that would have been okay, except for this medical mistake. But the way Baptist Children's Hospital handled it was so remarkable. They have a full disclosure policy. They explained immediately what had happened. They apologized. They brought the Sosas in, and the Sosas worked with the hospital to help them change procedures so this wouldn't happen again. They created a video to inform the nurses and staff that included the nurse who felt responsible for this mistake. And the Sosas never sued the hospital. They mediated a settlement where Baptist Hospital provides care for the life of Kayleen. And the father talks about being, you know, in total forgiveness of the hospital. He said nobody woke up intending to harm my daughter. It was a mistake.
So that's an example of what you're talking about with behavior, actually doing something.
Absolutely.
To respect the person who's been injured. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Howard on the line. Hi, Howard. You're on the air.
Yes. Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I think it's a very great subject to talk about today. I recently received an apology from my mother after being born. I'm 54 years old. We suffered as children a lot of turmoil as kids. And I became kind of hard because of that. And the apology, I didn't accept the apology, but I was put in a dilemma. She's 72 years old now. And I was in a position whether I had to make a decision. Do I show her the love that a mother and son should have, you know, as an offspring? Or do I keep myself separated from her, as I've done for many years? So I did the first part of the process. I didn't accept it, but I showed her some love to let her know that I'm there for her. But on the inside, I still feel that hardness.
Howard, that love you showed your mother, was it heartfelt? Do you feel love for your mother?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Do you feel love for your mother?
Yes, I do. I'm kind of wondering if it's not a real love the way I should have it as a son, and I question myself on that.
Yeah, I
can very easily address that, and this gentleman is bringing out the poignant, to me, horror
of the habits we create when we close our hearts. And he sounds like a very sincere gentleman. And unfortunately, when we practice in our mind over and over and over again, my mother harmed me. I'm in a very bad position because of something that happened in my past. We constantly create the physical and neurological changes of harm within ourselves on a regular basis, and it becomes both a habit and the norm. And changing that is very difficult. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel normal. And if we let that maintain, then we ask the kind of questions that this gentleman is asking, like, you know, is my heart, you know, really there, and how would I know? And the only thing I can tell him is our hearts never go anywhere. We just have to practice. And if he practices touching the part of him that feels connected to his mother, it will grow. And if he practices touching the part of him that distanced himself from his mother, that will grow.
We've only got a minute or less before we go to break. But be a little bit more concrete, Fred. What does that practice look like?
Well, it the practice would be very simple. Once you've had somebody reach out to you, go through your memory banks and find positive memories, whatever they might be. Two, confine journal simple things that you could do, practices. Again, it's all behavior,
yeah,
where you could show changes. Three, there are very simple compassion meditations to practice where somebody can go inside and actively generate compassion for somebody that might have harmed them. And four is one of the ways is to just get a broader existential perspective, which is that there's so much suffering in this world. Let me not contribute to it.
Thank you so much for that, Fred. Thank you, Howard, for your call. I wish you the best. I hope Fred's answers were helpful and will be helpful to you. We're talking about forgiveness. The person you just heard was Fred Luskin. He's director of the Stanford Forgiveness Project. I also have here in the studio with me Maurice Schweitzer, who's a professor at the Wharton School of Business. He studies topics like deception and how we rebuild trust. Our phone number here in the studio, if you want to join the conversation, is 888-477-9499. But I want to give you another number now, and that's 888-345-9499, and that's the number over there at Pledge Central. This is our spring pledge break, and we are asking you to show your support for this show and for all sorts of programming like it. I think you're about to hear the voices of our executive producer, Mike and Scott, and our COO, Kira McGrath. Mike and Kira, you there?
Yes, Dan, thank you so much. Give us a call now at 1-888-345-9499 to join the conversation in a different fashion by pledging your membership support to WHYY. If you think about how unique this program is, where else could you possibly find this kind of show on the dial? And then make that pledge because your support makes it possible. 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org.
And Mike, and we come to our members and our listeners several times a year for their support because we're public media. And the public in public media is you, our members. It's not government support. Over the years, we've seen the support that we get from the federal government, the state, Pennsylvania, Delaware, has unfortunately declined, which means that we need to look other places for support. And so we turn to our members and listeners more and more. And it's a unique service here in the Delaware Valley. We produce a lot of programming here. We also bring you great NPR programming, and that costs money also. So we really look to you several times a year for support. So we're asking now to take a moment midday and either give us a call at 1-888-345-9499 or go to our website, whyy.org, and make your pledge there.
We had a wonderful lunch delivered today from Pizza Rustica in Northern Liberties, and we thank them for that. And give us a call now at 1-888-345-9499 or pledge online at whyy.org. they are our partners in that way by supporting us with a lunch. You can support us right now by making a pledge of support to WHYY and by supporting all of our great programs that we have here. If you think about the show that we've been hearing about apologies, I think one theme that emerged is that actions speak louder than words in many ways. And right now we're asking you to take an action, and that is calling and making a pledge to support WHYY. And we thank you for your support. Let's go back to the show.
You're down to cry. I apologize a trillion times. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson.
Today's show's about apology, and it seems as though the music we're playing gets progressively more up to date as the show goes on. We're moving from the 50s now up to very, very recently with our music, but we are talking about apologies, and we're talking about forgiveness, what it takes to forgive, what's the impact of not forgiving, and gee, how do we do it? It's a great word, but it's pretty hard to do. My guest is Fred Luskin. He's on the phone with us from Stanford University, where he directs the Forgiveness Project. I'm joined here in the studio by Maurice Schweitzer. He's a professor at the Wharton School, and he studies deception and how we rebuild trust. Well, I have to say our phone lines are lit up, and I want to get to the callers right away. So let's go to Michael. Kristen. We've got Kristen on the line. Kirsten.
Hello?
Yes, Kirsten. Hi.
Oh, hi. Great, great. One of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking was this idea of self-forgiveness and the impact of being able to forgive oneself for either something that you've done, which is the more obvious thing, or even the perception, because the perception that something has been done wrong to you. That's one of the things that I'm really interested about what Fred is saying, that there's this sense that, I don't know, I'd like him maybe to address this a little further,
yeah.
How self-forgiveness is a really important piece on both sides. Like whether you perceive something's been done wrong to you or you've done wrong to someone else.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And this business of self-forgiveness, to follow up on that, and I will turn to you, Fred. The business of self-forgiveness, I have found personally and professionally in my office that those who forgive themselves quickly probably shouldn't. And those who beat themselves up probably shouldn't.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. The forgiveness of self can occur if you've either done something or didn't do something. I mean, I have people come in all the time who are struggling because they failed to act, or they failed to protect someone, or they failed to do what they felt that they should. And what the place that I have seen that people get stuck is, one, it's very hard to fully come to grips with how frail and fallible human beings are, including oneself. And it asks a kind of mercy both to ourselves and others. Different people struggle more. Like, some people struggle really hard to forgive themselves, and some people struggle really hard to forgive others. And you do meet people, like you mentioned, that they come into your office and they say, well, you know, I just mowed down 12 people, but, you know, they deserved it. And other people will cross the street wrong, and then they'll feel a strong regret. The thing that we recommend, and it's in keeping with every single thing that's been said during this hour, is the important thing for self-forgiveness is work on changing the behavior or actions that you regret and make amends in any way you can humanly possible and say you're sorry.
It's almost the same thing as when we ask forgiveness from someone else or apologize.
Except
to
we control more of it. And the thing that we encourage people to do is to act, to behave differently, to treat themselves differently. And The other piece is that this need for grief and grieving and feeling the wound is not an infinite process. But that's the piece that can that needs to be dealt with sometimes therapeutically if it lasts too long.
Yeah, I'm preparing a talk on the dangers of psychotherapy. And I think one of the dangers of psychotherapy is revisiting that wound over and over and over again, looking at it from 1,000 different angles, and all we're doing is, you know, keeping it there, keeping that wound fresh and bleeding, and preventing it from healing.
Our workshops and our seminars, I mean, that we hold locally, get a lot of treatment failures from psychotherapists based on exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, we were trained to talk about it, and that's not how healing happens. So let me turn to you, Maurice. How does healing happen? How does trust get rebuilt?
Well, I think there's a balance, just as you started off by suggesting, that is, we don't want to be too quick to forgive, and we don't want to be too slow to forgive. What we do want to be is prepared to forgive and prepared to apologize. And
what's that mean?
Well, the idea that we're likely to fall short, both for ourselves and in our relations with others, is ubiquitous. We have what are called psychological contracts with relationships with other people. So we think about, you know, we might have a marriage contract, we might have an employment contract, but those contracts really don't span the whole universe of our relationship. And so in our minds, we have expectations. We have expectations about how our coworkers, how our boss, how our employer, how our spouse might treat us. Those expectations are going to be are not going to match perfectly with those around us. We're going to fall short, and we need to prepare ourselves to mend those relationships. And there are many examples of, you know, companies, for example, that are likely to be surprised. I think Tiger Woods was surprised. You know, the Tylenol poisoning of 1982 wasn't Tylenol's fault, but they needed to prepare a reaction, which they did very effectively. And throughout our relationships, and I think even with ourselves, we need to prepare ourselves to forgive ourselves for failings when we don't live up to the standards that we set for ourselves.
Hmm. Fred, you've done a lot of research that actually shows the health benefits of forgiving. Tell us about that.
Well, the answer to that is yes. We have shown that it can lower blood pressure and can reduce this experience of stress and can reduce depression and anger. And other people have shown its positive effect on the nervous system and the endocrine system. The simplest way to explain that and hold it is, again, past grief or normal grief, which could be 10 seconds for something small and a year and a half for something profound. When we're like living our life, and then, as I think that gentleman Howard responded, you know, I'm still cold to my mother. When we bring coldness back into our life, or we bring anger back into our experience right now, we physiologically react to it.
So it's not his mother's behavior now that's causing him harm. It's his own internal poison. It's his own resentment.
It's his own resentment, yeah. And it's a lot to do with the narrative and the construction that he has developed to explain his life today. And unfortunately, so many of us create constructions which limit our ability to be fully happy, because we say, I can't be, or I won't be, because of this harm that either I did or somebody else did in the past.
Well, with that note, we're going to have to say goodbye. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I want to thank you both so much for joining us. I think it's been a great show and an important one. My guests have been Fred Luskin. He's director of the Forgiveness Project at Stanford University. I was joined here in the studio by Maurice Schweitzer. He's at the Pennsylvania's Wharton School, where he researches deception and how to rebuild trust. Well, I want to give you a number to call. We're right in the middle of our fundraiser, and the number I want you to call is 888-345-9499. Again, that's 888-345-9499. I'm asking you to get involved with this kind of programming, with this show, and show your support by dialing that number. We're joined over in Pledge Central by Mike and Scott, our executive producer, Kira McGrath, the CEO here at WHYY. Mike and Kira?
Thank you, Dan. And thank you for another wonderful show and really many enlightening points that you made over this past hour. You make it possible with your pledge of support when you call 1-888-345-9499 or when you go online to whyy.org and make a pledge of support. It's people like you who keep Voices in the Family on the air. It's been there for well over 20 years now, Kira, and it's just another great success story of public broadcasting here in this region. Give us a call now and show your support, 1-888-345-9499.
Yeah, Mike, and this was just one example of the great local radio programming that we produce here at WHYY. Before Voices in the Family, you heard 2 hours of Radio Times. Marty does two different topics every day for call-in. Later this afternoon, we're going to hear Fresh Air with Terry Gross. If you listen on Saturday, you hear You Bet Your Garden with Mike McGrath, Chef's Table with Jim Coleman, and we're constantly thinking of new ways to bring you new programming, but it all takes money to put it on the air. As we've said a number of times on these drives, more than 50% of our operating budget comes from our members, our supporters. We're public media, public supported, and so that's why we need you to support us, and we come to you on radio several times a year looking for your support. So whatever amount is comfortable for you, how you value what we do here, please take a moment now and give us a call. Help us to reach our goal. And give us a call at 1-888-345-9499 or go to our website at whyy.org and make a pledge of support.
For example, if you want to come in at the $100 level, we would love to send you, as our way of saying thank you, a book by Dr. Dan Gottlieb. It's called Learning from the Heart, and that can be signed for you and sent to you as a way of saying thank you for your support to WHYY. If you think about the conversation we just heard about forgiveness, how in-depth it was, how many different facets were covered, you can't find this kind of discussion anywhere else on the radio dial. It's just not there. It's something that's unique to public broadcasting and unique to WHYY with people like Dan Gottlieb, Marty Moskowitz, and all the wonderful hosts that we have here. You make it possible with your support at 1-888-345-9499 or, like we just heard that pledge, online at whyy.org. We had a wonderful lunch. We still have a wonderful lunch from Rustica. It's a great restaurant in Northern Liberties. They've supported us with that kind of show of wonderful pizza boxes arriving here to feed our great volunteers who've come here to support us with their work. Right now, we're asking you to